The African philosophy is something that's kind of missing, I think, a lot from the discourse.
What I wanted to kind of highlight is just like the importance of us going back to Africa.
Just because you're a hypocrite
doesn't mean you're wrong.
It doesn't mean you're wrong. Doesn't remove the validity of the question.
I think it's the issue of picking on Africa.
We need to create a generation where there's so many young, bright leaders.
Welcome to Afrolog Podcast, a platform for informed debate and discussion on African and the wider Black community issues.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is a special episode. We have some fantastic guests here and we're going to be discussing issues going on in Nigeria, in particular the NDDC probe, which has reached the news recently. And we'll also be talking about NIPOST and the situation regarding that. Thank you everyone for joining. We have three amazing guests. I'd like them to quickly introduce themselves. The first one is Kunle.
Hello. Everyone, my name is Kalade Omi. I'm a legal practitioner based here in Abuja. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Obami.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Ayobami Adekojo, policy advisor and comms strategist in Nigeria.
And Raphael.
Hi, I'm Raf. I'm a lawyer. I work in international development here in the UK.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah. Thank you very much. So, and of course, we're joined by Oyin and Rashid from the Afrolog team. So, in terms of what's going on in Nigeria, we all know Nigeria to be a place where all kinds of things happen all the time. Recently, news of the Nigeria Delta Development Corporation reached the news when, during a hearing, a Senate hearing, Professor Ponde, who is the managing director of the Development Corporation, actually fainted or purported to faint while he was giving evidence before the committee. And of course, this kind of released a big wave of videos, of reactions online. And it's been a subject of much discussion. Of course, most of us not feeling that Mr. Ponde's faint was genuine, and others being unsure. The commission was started in response to the request by nine governors who believed that there needed to be a probe into money that has not been correctly appropriated in the Niger Delta area. And the president responded to that request and created the commission. And initially, it was 40 million naira that was the subject of the commission, but that has since changed. So I want to get some first initial reactions. First of all, to whether or not what we saw in that Senate hearing was genuine. And because Professor Ponde has released a statement, or there's been a statement released on his behalf, which says that he's been suffering from an ongoing health condition. So was that genuine, or was this an attempt to escape some of the scrutiny for Nigerian spending in the Niger Delta region? Does anyone have an opinion on that?
I think I should just take that. The thing is, it's a combination of both. He had health issues. He's asthmatic and he's hypertensive as well, from what I was able to see afterwards. And the place was a bit hot and stuffy. The Speaker of the House of Representatives, when he came in, he said as much as well. But the problem is, when they were asking him questions, there were a lot of it that he could not answer himself. And it could be because usually these people are figureheads. The MDs of the NDDC, they are usually under the Minister of the Niger Delta, which was the next person that was probed, Godswill Akpabio. And this is the main reason the previous MD put everything on the minister's lap. Like, see, everything I signed, he made me do it. He even told me to swear oath and all. So if you actually saw it live, you see that there were some parts of it that he was looking to the minister for answers. But he's not there to help you. So I think the shock eventually, everything got the better of him. So it's a mixed bag for me. It's a bit of both, actually. Eventually, he had to succumb to, I don't know, maybe health conditions or what, but he did not have answers to the questions.
What exactly were the questions, actually?
Let me just like lay a premise for it. The previous MD, that's the Joy Nunei lady, you must have seen viral videos of her. She was the MD, and they accused her of insubordination. The minister accused her of insubordination. Then he fired her, brought in this IMC, that's like an interim committee, to basically probe the previous MD and steer the ship to the next MD. But the problem is this new IMC came in at the COVID time. So they had some intervention funds, which they spent like almost immediately. He's been there since February and he could not account for 3 months. So they asked him like, okay, you guys spent about 3 billion on this particular communications company. What was it for? He said it was for a forensic audit. Personally, I don't know any communications company that does forensic audits myself, but they asked questions about COVID spending in the Senate, because the one you saw in the video was in the House of Representatives. So they asked him about COVID spending in the Senate. He said he gave everybody in the commission 1 million naira. He gave every other person that if they don't take care of themselves, nobody will. So the questions were towards the spending from the time he became MD, but he did not have a lot of answers for that, to be fair.
Well, that's the thing. I think he'd only been in charge for 74 days. He released, well, there was a statement that was released on the NDDC website. And my issue with it is that it's very partisan. It seemed to defend him unquestioningly when it should be defending the integrity of the commission itself. But anyway, the statement says that he's only been there for 74 days and he's done such and such to the best of his ability, and that he should not be, that they changed the nature of the proceedings. So is there a chance that he's being held accountable for mismanagement which occurred before he arrived?
Actually, yes. Because a lot of the spending happened before him. I'm not saying spending did not happen with him. He should answer for the time he was there. That's the. But when you look at some claims of 80-something billion or the contracts that were in 2019 budget, it was not there in 2019. It was not there when they wrote the 2019 budget. So he cannot account for what happened in 2019, and the person that is supposed to account for that already put everything to the Niger Delta minister. That's Joy Nunei. She already puts everything on his laps, which is why they invited the minister of the Niger Delta as well. But I don't think it's fair for him to answer questions for what happened before him. I don't think that's normal, and it's only natural for him to feel that way. But I think he should be able to answer the questions for the few months he's been there as well. Although that should not be the focus of the entire thing, because you have to remember that he's also launching a forensic audit on the previous administration of the NDDC,
okay,
which for him, he believes this entire thing is a political fight for him not to continue with that forensic audit.
But yeah. I still don't buy that, Ken. I mean, either he has a health condition which, when he had an episode, or he didn't. You know, I don't think there's a middle road here.
I'll be honest with you. If it was me and I was in that situation and the pressure is coming at me, 12 things, I won't lie.
Sorry, just going to jump into it. So I think you're going to have to defer to the IMC chairman, because one of the things you realize is at the end of the day, when someone says, "Oh, like I'm indisposed or I don't feel well," you have to actually listen to the person first, because if anything happens, if he faints and he actually dies, then it's on you, because you've been saying, "Oh yeah, this guy wasn't actually sick."
Absolutely.
And yeah, if with courts, for example, it usually happens that people would come and say, "Oh, this is wrong with me. This is what's going on," and the court has to be fair, because only someone that is living can actually stand trial or can actually provide information that you seek. So I think in that context, yeah, you have to defer to it. But then I think in Nigeria, we've seen it. We become so accustomed to seeing people, you know, do a lot of things that we become so desensitized to medical conditions of people until something actually really happens to them. So I think in this case, maybe we just need to give him the benefit of doubt.
That's a really good point, actually. That's a very, very good point.
Of course, I think it's true. Once you once someone does something like that, you have to take it seriously because you just don't know, you know. But and it's been said that he's in a stable condition in a hospital or in a clinic in Abuja. But I want to know if it's the case, then I want to know how long it is before they can reconvene the committee and ask him back to provide the answers that we need to hear. That's the question. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we need to diagnose him. If there's an issue,
I think looking at that, you would see that from the way the probe was, from the continuation of the probe and the questions, Akpabio came after, that's the current minister of Niger Delta. And you would see that at some point he was making a few accusations saying that, yeah, the people that get most of these contracts are like members of the House of Representatives, former members of the Senate. And we could see that from that particular direction that this probe was probably not going to continue. And there was going to be a political attempt to, I would like to be proven otherwise, but I would, there are a lot of probes in Nigeria. There's always a probe at some point in time. And I know when there was the subsidy probe, Farouk Lawan's probe, he ended up with trading accusations where he was, oh, Farouk Lawan was the one that collected money from Otedola. And at the end of the day, you know, most of these probes always end at that level, just the probe. So I would be shocked if anything comes out of it and there's continuation. But the points have been made, you know, the allegations, the trading has been made, allegations have been made. And I think that it served the purpose it's supposed to serve, you know, a spectacle for most of the people.
Raphael, go ahead.
Oh, no, please go on. I'll wait. Go on.
No, go ahead. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. It's been quite interesting so far. But then I don't mean to change the course of the conversation or anything. But then I believe that the whole spectacle with the probe and everything is just, it's simply a reflection of the deep rots going on in the NDDC and the matters that have to do with the development of the Niger Delta. So I think that I recommend that we probably look at it from that bigger picture perspective, because, you know, we wouldn't be having all these probes and the spectacle and the drama and the in quote entertainment that we have seen in the past couple of weeks if the NDDC was not in deep rot as we see today. So the questions that I think that we should direct ourselves to is the issue of the mandate of the NDDC, and then what has gone wrong, what went wrong, what is going wrong, and then what recommended blueprint do we have for the future to solve this anomaly, you know, because these are the issues, you know. The NDDC as we have today has been fraught with so much allegations, and there've even been legal judgments against management and staff of the NDDC of so much corruption, racketeering, misappropriation, incompetence, and things of the sort. And they've simply failed to deliver on their basic mandate of delivering for the people of the Niger Delta. You know, so the probe, the public probe, as we've seen today, is just, in my opinion, this is a very, very anecdotal opinion, but then it's just something that the parliamentarians, the reps have done to want to pander to Nigerians, you know, more like grandstanding, because as Kunle rightly mentioned, that this is not the first probe that we would see on controversial issues, and he rightly pointed out that the subsidy, and then we've seen too many probes, but then what has been the outcome, you know? We hear noise for a bit and the next thing it dies down, you know. Take for example what happened in 2013, 2014 with the NIS recruitment scandal, when Abamoro was minister and where people died and where there was fraud and everything. There was a whole probe on that, but then what's happened so far? So like I say, I think an exploration into deeper issues behind all of this would, I think, give us a better understanding on the issue.
Does anyone think also that this represents a step forward in terms of Buhari's kind of willingness to hold this probe in the first place? Couldn't another president have said, no, I'm not interested, we're not doing this?
If I can come in there, probes are not new, Buhari or not, the most corrupt president in Nigeria. In fact, looking at Nigeria and the Farouk Lawan example that we have, is usually corrupt people that start probes so that they can have a share of it. This is just what happens. It's, for example, the House of Representatives chairman, he was getting contracts from NDDC. By the time Akpabio wrote the letter, he had about 9 billion in contracts. They named Senator Umuabushi the Senate chairman on NDDC. They named 11 of his companies that got contracts from like the previous administration as well. So it's possible these people stopped getting these contracts and then they want like a size of the pie. So there's nothing with Buhari there. If they do a forensic audit, it's not new as well. Although I would love them to do a forensic audit and publish that like in public. But I just want to talk about the subsidy probe before I continue with the future for the Niger Delta. We can't really say nothing came out of the subsidy probe because they indeed prosecuted a lot of people, and the previous president tried to remove subsidy, but it led to protest, and the rest was history. So something really happened with the subsidy probe, but it was just not as deep as we would have liked. For the NDDC and the Niger Delta, the fact is we don't need things like a Ministry of Niger Delta or the NDDC. We are just papering over the cracks. What we need is resource control in the Niger Delta. We need the proper land use act, like where people can actually own lands and whatever is below or above it. But this is radical for Nigeria because we come from a largely feudalist history, especially for, you know, before the amalgamation and all. So for general people to just own things, it's alien for us. The government does not really want that because you can then get a lot of wealth irrespective of government. You might go haywire as they look at it. But at the end of the day, that's the only solution. We are always going to have things like the NDDC, NEDC, because of what is going on in Borno, Yobe, Adamawa, and Kona. We already have the NEDC as well. It's being paid from value-added tax that is gotten from alcohol that they don't drink in the north. You know, just a lot of stupid things going on, but they cannot work. The NDDC cannot work. The Niger Deltans voted for a different candidate from Buhari. Then they voted Senator Akpabio out. What happens? Buhari got votes from other regions of the country, became president. Then he nominated Akpabio that lost an election in his own home state as the Minister of Niger Delta. So now they are being represented by people they did not choose. But if something happens, we say, oh, look at Niger Deltans eating Niger Delta money or whatnot. So under this kind of structure, minorities do not have the voice until people can actually own lands around them and people can actually control things around them. So it's just, we are always going to have this. The next NDDC administration will be probed. Then they will share money for parliamentarians. Then everything will die down again. Then it happens all over again. The same cycle will keep going on, regardless of the political will of the president, until we actually change laws and we make a radical move to it. So,
yeah.
All right. So
if you don't, just in direct response to you and everything, you made some very valid points, but then I don't think I agree with you 100%. So you made a point on how you don't think that we need the NDDC and things of the sort. You know, I understand the sentiment, quite frankly, although it's the same, it'd be political, but I understand the sentiment. However, we need to understand the reason behind the NDDC, you know, and then we have to discuss that side by side with the tenets of affirmative action. So just briefly talking about affirmative action is basically a form of restorative justice where people who have been maligned historically or in the past is more or less a compensation for the ills of before, and then trying to make sure they have a certain path for the future, a good path for the future. So now you then ask yourself, is the Niger Delta region deserving of affirmative action? And in my opinion, in my humble opinion, I think, yes, they are deserving of affirmative action. You know, so you look at the environmental pollution, the insurgency and things of the sort. These are, now, let's go to numbers here. The Niger Delta has given about nearly 70% of the revenue of Nigeria and accounts for almost 90% of Nigeria's foreign exchange. But then the Niger Delta is cursed with 70% poverty rates. How it doesn't, that doesn't add up, you know. So justice needs to be met, you know, or justice needs to be attained. Now, let me just give a brief historical background, you know. So if you want to trace it back, yeah, many people are, should I say, distracted about what's been going on with the NDDC. But then if you want to look at it from a historical perspective, now let me just quickly, just brief history lesson, history 101. Now, if you want to trace it back, you know, with the whole issue of Niger Delta, you trace it back to 1957. Now, so some of us will be familiar with the Willings Commission reports, you know, and then one of the Willings Commission recommendations highlighted that the people of the Niger Delta, especially the Ijaw people, have been maligned by government and by the system and institution, and then there is the need to compensate them. Now, on the heels of this Willings Commission's report on minorities, in 1961, the government established what was then called the NDDB. That was the Niger Delta Development Board. And then come down to the 1963 Republic Constitution that recognized this board, actually, the NDDB. But then the issue with this board is that this board was strictly advisory, you know. So, and then, you know, at the time, the South-South, as we have today, was under the Eastern region. So there was large representation from the Eastern region and things of the sort, quite all right. So it was just meant to advise the government on projects with Niger Delta people and then to see how it could compensate the people for the ills of the past. But then that failed because they didn't really have power. And then the people felt that that board was strictly advisory and then could not fulfill the mandates of the Niger Delta people. So if you're familiar with the works of Isaac Boro down to Ken Saro-Wiwa, these are the things that were highlighted. Now, come down to the year 1976, where the Niger Delta River Basin Development Authority was established, you know, that too failed because that was created along 9 other river basin authorities. Now, the period between 1976 and 1992 were very, very interesting because now you had in the place of NDDB or NDDC at the time, or the River Basin Authority, you had about two presidential committees here that were dedicated towards the mandate of the NDDC as we have today, you know. And that means, so some of the products of those presidential committees, you know, were the development of states. Now, between that period, that's when you had more states created in the Niger Delta region. So you had Akwa Ibom in 1987, You had Delta in 1991 and Bayelsa in 1996. So all with the goal of trying to compensate the Niger Delta people. Then finally, the almighty Ompadek. Now, if anybody's really familiar with the history of Niger Delta, Ompadek is a very, very interesting subject. Now, Ompadek was established in 1992 by Babangida. You know, and then Ompadek was then finally given some, unlike the NDDB, was given some revenue to control, you know. So I think it was meant to be 3% of the derivation fund or things of the sort. But then the same issues we have with NDDC today, Ompadek had it, you know. But Ompadek would be less money, but with the same problems. You get what I mean? So I think I saw a report about between 1992 and 1996, Ompadek was meant to receive about 85 billion, but the federal government only disbursed about 13 billion. But even with that 13 billion that was disbursed, there was so much racketeering and corruption and things of the sort. Now, finally, let's come down to the NDDC as we have today. Established, the act was in 2000, and then it started from 2001. So if you look at the long title of the NDDC Act, it says that, you know, we need to reposition this commission. That's a strong variance to the NDDC, to Ompadek for more effectiveness for the Niger Delta people. Now, this act, in direct contrast to Ompadek, was meant to give more control to the Niger Delta people, you know? So that's how you had more representation. And then now, let's go to the finance aspect of it. Now, by virtue of the powers in that act, 15% of FAAC, allocations for the Niger Delta area is meant to go to the NDDC. 3% of the budget of all oil companies operating both onshore and offshore in the Niger Delta region are meant to have 3% of their budget for the people of Niger Delta. So all the Mobil, Agip, Texaco, Shell, 3% of their budgets, the monies go to the Niger Delta people. And then finally, 50% of the ecological fund, 50% of the ecological fund for the Niger Delta region goes to the NDDC. So right now, and then, so I read this report by Budget that says between then and now, there has been about 15 trillion naira that has been released for the Niger Delta region on its own. You get what I mean? So I would say that the intention, so going down to Ayobami's, sorry, I went too far historically, but going back to Ayobami's assertion here, the intentions for the creation of not just the NDDC, but for UMPADECA, NDDB, and the River Basin Authority have been very clear to try for affirmative action of the Niger Delta people, you know, and then those concerns are still as valid as valid as they were in 1950 or 1960 as they are today. That Niger people are in need of justice and things of the sort. So with the intentions really matter, and then we need the NDDC to reposition or to reposition to deliver on this mandate. We can't scrap it. We just need to do better. I'm so sorry I went too long, but then that's just my point. We need to do better.
Thank you. That's really useful. Sorry, go on, Kunle.
Right. So I was going to align myself with Raphael's position, but in the extreme, and what you would realize is a little bit of, you'd see that also there's the NDDC. And I'm just going to mention that alongside this NDDC probe, there's so many probes going on right now. There's the probe on the Ministry of, I think it's the Ministry of Labour with Ngige, and the drama with the Senator James Faliki, I'm sorry, the James Faliki. There's the NDC probe that's coming on. There's going to be a probe at some point in time of the Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs, because there are lots of things that are going on simultaneously. So it's not necessarily an NDC issue. I had this conversation with my friend, and I was saying that, that it feels like it's the people that are not holding their leaders to account. And she made me realize that, see, there's massive corruption going on in every single geopolitical zone in this country. And it's not a function of NDDC. It's a function of the leaders and the person that actually put them in the position. You know, the person that the buck stops, that's the current president of Nigeria. The NDC, I think since Buhari has come into power, the number of chairmen that have come in, you know, we've had Nissi Maikiri, we've had the former commissioner of information in River State, we've had Joy Nune, and there have been so many chairmen, and things have still been the same. It's not changed. It just feels like it's from one person to, you know, get money and get finance to the next person. So it seems like the person that is supposed to be interested in the actual success of NDDC, the only person that could actually make an impact or can say, yeah, you know what, I want this commission to succeed, has just been like, yeah, you know what, you guys do what you want to do. You're free to do what you want to do. Nobody, there's no control. It's just vibes. And I think that's just where it's been.
So if you're referring to.
Yeah. Because I've come to the conclusion that, the buck stops at the president's table. You know, at some point I said, you know what, the person that recommends the NDC chairman is usually the Minister of Niger Delta Affairs. But when you look at the NDC Act, you'd realize that, the person that actually appoints is the president, and also the Senate confirms, and then also there has to be concurrence by the House of Representatives. If you've done this consistently, you know, you've been bringing different people, and you can still see that this commission hasn't made an impact. I think at some point you have to reposition. And that was the intention of the entire reposition strategy. That's the probe and the... But as it is presently, it seems like it's just, you know, it's lip service to what is actually going on. It just feels like no one's actually interested, or the person that's supposed to be in charge isn't interested in the success of the commission. And when you see if the president actually wants to be involved in the success, you would see some actual results. At this point, it doesn't seem like there's any interest in that. Yeah.
I agree definitely with a hands-on approach. I just think that also there's the scope to be criticized a lot. If you, as president, begin to interfere in things, people will now come to say, oh, but why is he doing this? He has to act in accordance with the constitution. This and that is not proper. He's being biased. He doesn't understand what he's doing. He's meddling, this and that. So, I mean, I think he may be
trying to avoid that kind of situation so as not to jump in all the time?
Yeah, so I think just from my own perspective, you know, with everything that is going on, the Pondé, for example, is a direct representative of the president. So, you know, he has the president's seal of approval. He was the president's appointee. And I think we a lot of things have gone on in Nigeria from 2015. You know, we've been able to absolve. It feels like everyone is just aloof and it's like, oh, yeah, this is the man responsible. But Pondé is not necessarily... Pondé is a representative of the president. And then it feels like is a, you know, it's embarrassing to see the to see people that representatives of the president trade different accusations. You know, Pondé is saying one thing, the Minister of Niger Delta is saying another thing. But these people all belong to the same administration. They are appointed by the same people.
Okay.
There's no synergy, there's no cohesion. And it feels like, yeah. Because what Pondé was saying that day, it's literally the president speaking. If you look at it from that directive, it's like, yeah, the president doesn't know what's going on. It shouldn't come out and be saying, oh yeah, I don't know facts and figures, I don't know what's going on in this commission, I don't know this, I don't know that.
No,
it
I feels, mean, it's a little embarrassing. The questions, no?
Yeah, but then in the context, it seems like, or it, there were questions that he obviously could not answer, or if he answered the questions, he would have implicated himself. And he was trying his best to avoid answering those questions. Because once you say something, then you're going to be in trouble when they say, okay, yeah, but you said this and this is the opposite. So I think just from that perspective, from that particular perspective, yeah.
Yeah, just briefly to add what Wakunle has said, you know. So I know prior since last year or so, there's been the issue of monitoring and evaluation of the NDDC, and then Apabio as minister has always, I mean, rhetorically, has always said it's just based on rhetoric. I don't know about the action, but he's talked about the need for M&E, serious monitoring evaluation, and things of this sort. And he also mentioned this during the probe. So now, I'm going to agree with Ayobami's point of view where he said, you know, this man was hypertensive and he wasn't feeling well. That is why he fainted, you know. Let me just acknowledge the fact that there are conspiracy theories there that say that he was just trying to evade the questions, but I'm not saying that I agree with them. But then now, the question, I can remember quite vividly, the question that he was asked before he fainted, and he couldn't quite answer this question, right, was when, so the NDDC on its own has a department that is meant to handle M&E, monitoring evaluation. So you have all these projects and then they're meant to track the progress and to see levels of compliance and things of the sort. But then one of the members of the investigative panel asked him, I said, you know, Mr. MD, there's a contract that your management committee awarded, you know, for almost 600 million naira to, I think the name of the company was Clear Solutions or something like that. So, but then, do you know these people awarded the contract, what's about 600 million naira, to enable NDDC to locate the projects that they have funded? So I remember the House of Reps member asked, so are you trying to say you're paying people to help you point out the projects which you have awarded, which you should have all the descriptions, and which you should have a dedicated department to do this? And he couldn't answer the question, and then he fainted, you know. So these are just one of the issues that, from Kunle's point and things of this. And let me just add one sec, is the fact that there seems to be no political will, because I think people underestimate the power of political will. You know, when there is political will from when there is strong political will from the top, I can assure you that there's absolutely nothing that is going to impede an agenda, you know. So in my opinion, I feel that if the president is serious about ridding NDDC of corruption, and not just the NDDC, different organizations and different sectors, that it would have happened by now if he had the political will. And then, sorry to say, but then I feel that President Buhari as a man, his rhetoric doesn't match his actions sometimes, because he seems to lack political will with his anti-corruption agenda.
Okay, so yeah, I was actually going to make a point on that. I wanted to highlight what I thought were some of the positives. And by the way, the way you laid out the history of the NDDC, I think is useful. And I think that, as you say, with political will, if such an instrument can be used to bring the development to the region that the people need,
then I think it's a good thing. I think that would be definitely preferable to just wrapping it up and throwing it away. But I look at the way that the leader of the House of Rep recused himself at the beginning of the hearing, because he'd been accused of profiting from some contract. So he said, look, for the sake of neutrality, I'm going to recuse myself here. I look at the way that the president said, okay, look, let's go ahead with this probe. Although, as we've heard, he hasn't been active in facilitating that it's doing well. But I look at this, and I also look at the way that the NDDC itself, they released the financial information of the transactions that they had done under the leadership of Mr. Ponde, just to show that there's nothing dodgy going on here. So am I wrong for looking at these things as positives, going in the direction that maybe there's going to be some accountability here? Because for me, it's about accountability. So when such things happen and people can see it and people make noise about it, that's accountability. So where we don't have state instruments or legal instruments that are effective, as we know, there are probes and there are stories all the time. But instead, we also have a social means of holding people to account. We have embarrassment. And okay, it's not very effective all the time, but the more we use it, the more we can use them, as opposed to having nothing in its place. I don't know whether Rashid...
sorry, let me just say that embarrassment doesn't work in Nigeria. That's far from me. Like, it's unrealistic to expect that. There's no shame. I think that's just what I'm being sincere. There's no shame in Nigeria.
I was going to support that same thing. I'm not really sure how effective, as you just said, I'm not really sure how effective embarrassment has been or how effective it will be going forward. I don't really have anything else to add.
Sorry, in addition to Dami's point, I mean, you mentioned the part about the probe and how the figures have been able to come out and things of the sort. Well, this is just me. I'm not trying to be contrarian or anything, but then I don't really see that as a positive, because from this angle, so now budgets, the budget process in Nigeria has, I wouldn't say it's completely transparent, but then it's relatively transparent as before, as compared to decades ago. So at least Nigerians can go and see, okay, this is how much. So I can tell you for a fact that the NDC's last budget was about 160. So the Niger Delta Ministry's budget is about 160 billion naira. But then, so with regards to the probe and the transparency and everything, so let me just highlight the powers of the powers of the House of Reps. So, just like in the court of law, the House of Reps and the Senate have the power to subpoena a document or make you order you to bring any document that they want to see. You get what I mean? But then, now you've seen all this. You've heard about during the probe and everything. You heard them reading some lines to say, okay, this, why was this spent on this? Why was this spent on this? Why was it spent on that? But then you then ask yourself, there's the budget and then there's also an expenditure. And there's also an expenditure statement, because I think that is where you would find some very interesting things where you want to look at the expenditure. And then obviously they were privy to this information by their standing as representatives. But then have these things been made public? That's the issue to the general public for Nigerians to see. You get what I mean? So have these things actually been made public? So can I go on the internet today or go on the website to say, okay, so NDDC, within the last 1 year, this is how you have disbursed all the monies that has come to you. Can we really see that? So I don't really see that as a positive. You know, I think we need to do better, especially in terms of our open data policy.
Yeah, also to add to what Marfella said, I think if you look at the NDDC Act, you'd see that the people that drafted the Act, they kind of realized that, yeah, accountability was going to be a problem, and they decided to create a framework to, you know, to correct that. And I think there's a particular section that says that the NDDC has to present their budget for approval every year. There has to be an audit every 6 months. It's pretty elaborate. There are provisions there that are stated. But then, also going to what Ayobami said earlier, the current NDC, for all intents and purposes, is not designed to work. And if you look at what Joy Nunes said, you know, when she goes back to Port Harcourt, she's expected to, you know, give some money to some people. I don't know if she's saying, because I always say with John Union, I don't know everyone. I don't think anyone that's passed through the four walls of NDDC has any form of moral right to say, oh yeah, I didn't do this, I didn't do that. So I'm just going to not speak to anyone's innocence. But she said the correct thing, because you're expected to, you know, give contracts for the boys. You're expected to deliver things to some particular people, because the system has to keep flowing, everything has to keep going. And the day you decide that you want to stop it, there are so many vested interests that are going to go for your neck, sometimes even your life. So it's a careful balance that you have to try to manage. With Ponde, for example, you could see Ponde sitting there, and he knows that if they don't do these things, I'm not sure if Ponde said it, but then he was saying that at some point, that if we don't do these things, there will be restiveness in the region. So we need to ensure that this money flows. But again, the point I'm trying to make is the act already creates a framework to stop, it's like to block these issues and ensure accountability, but no one follows it. It's just there to be there sake. So, and I think that's where the problem comes in, because the commission at present isn't designed to work, isn't designed to function. Yeah.
If I can come in, with accountability is always going to be hard. The previous president, coincidentally from the Niger Delta, from like the biggest ethnic group in the Niger Delta, Goodluck Jonathan, he made a statement that became a viral joke in Nigeria. He said, you have to separate the...
Sorry, Ayobami, I think you've cut out there.
I think I was talking about Goodluck Jonathan's separation of goats from the yam analogy. And this is the same reason I was saying that we need a radical solution to things like the NDDC, because as you mentioned, OMPADEC failed, NDDC will fail. You can say affirmative action from today to tomorrow, but all these things will only go to the top 1%, either the people that are able to carry arms to get the amnesty deal or the political leaders. Nothing will shift the needle for the real Niger Delta citizens. Nothing will happen. If you like, make the next 10 presidents some sort of affirmative action for Niger Delta people. It's just not going to change anything until there are proper property rights. So until we separate that good from the yam, from that analogy, we are always going to have accountability issues. And it's always going to go to the top 1%. You either pick up guns against the state and then you sit down in front of the president eventually for some amnesty deal, or you become a top gun in NDDC and get it that way. Will anything change in anybody's village or something? I really do not think so. We are just going to have more probes in every budget cycle. And I think we should just be prepared for that.
Okay, so following from that then, as we're getting to the end, I just want to talk about suggestions. So accountability has been said a couple of times, but I think someone mentioned transparency of data and transparency. I think that was Raymond. Transparency of use of financial. Sorry, Raphael. So any more suggestions in terms of how to improve the situation going forward?
Yeah, so my suggestion, my suggestion is also, I just want to also use the opportunity to throw a question to Oyi, Ayo, and Kunle too. Now, I've always questioned the role that the Ministry of Niger Delta plays in all of this, you know. So, although NDDC was established in 2001 or 2000, as the case may have it, the Niger Delta Commission, the Ministry of Niger Delta didn't come up until 2008-2009. Under President Yar'Adua at the time. And then now, there are many questions as to what the role of the Ministry of Niger Delta is as regards this. Now, there have been accusations of bureaucratic bottlenecks. And then secondly, very, very important aspect of this, and which was raised by the former Minister of Niger Delta, Usani Usani, where he mentioned that there's been issues of duplicity of contracts. So you have contracts, for example, that have been written under the Ministry of Niger Delta, but still under the NDDC too. And then the fact that the Ministry of Niger Delta only has one parastatal under it, which is the NDDC, which is a very, very huge and that grant to an organization that it can't control still begs the question as to what exactly is the efficiency of the Ministry of Niger Delta. So do we scrap it or what do we do about that? So for me, I say that we need to call into question and try to see, ask very important questions as to what we can do about this ministry and if it serves its purpose. And then my second and the final recommendation of this, which you mentioned, is that we need an open data policy, which promotes transparency with the expenditure and the budgets of the NDDC. But then, please, my first question to the Ministry of Niger Delta, if Kunle and Uyin and Ayo would kindly give their opinions on that, please.
So I'm just going to say that, just to answer both questions, the first thing I'm going to say regarding going forward, I think you need someone that is clearly interested in NDDC succeeding. With all respect to Uncle Godzio as Akpabio, I don't think if you want a particular thing to succeed, you don't put someone that's been accused of grand corruption at various stages to man the sensitive position, such as the Ministry of the Niger Delta. It's a very, very, it's a disservice to the people of the Niger Delta. I don't want to say insulting, but let me just use that word. It feels insulting that, okay, yeah, you say you're interested in that development and then you put this person in charge. There's nothing good that's going to come out from that. So you need strong will from the top. You need someone that's actually interested in the development of Niger Delta. If you listen to Joy Nune speak, and I've gone back to read Joy Nune's trajectory, you know, she was one of the people that was, she was involved in Ken Sarawiwa's trial. She was close to him. So she's purely Ogoni. She understands the struggle. She goes through the effects of environmental degradation. These are the kind of people you need, people that are committed to the cause, people that fought for the upliftment of the Niger Delta for a very, very long time. And if you're actually interested in those things succeeding, then you put people like that in those positions.
Sorry, can someone I just ask you to spell her name? Joy?
Yeah, it's J-O. I think different. There are different variations of her name. It's J-O-Y and then there's J-O-Y. The actual, and then there's N-U-N-I-E-H.
Okay, just so that, okay, cool. Just so that we can have a look at her. Please go on.
Yeah. So there are people that at the end of the day they've spoken about the issues of Niger Delta for a very, very long time. And then they have that trajectory, they have that. So it's putting those people that actually care in those positions, not people that are there for personal enrichment. So I think that's one. You need strong will from the top. That I think that's my, and then back to Raphael, you know, NDDC was created to resolve an issue. And then also the Ministry of Niger Delta was created to resolve the same issue. Because as at the time when Yar'Adua became president, there was the peak of the Niger Delta agitation. And he wanted to correct those issues. Now it was able to reduce, and with Jonathan becoming president, it was suppressed for a little. And now it seems like everything is all well and good. But these people know that at the core is the fight for resources. Once the tap stops flowing, there's going to be restiveness again. And that's what people are trying to, or that's why people that are interested are trying to balance. So I think we've created, it also goes to a lot of things that we've done in Nigeria. We've created we pay money to resolve our problems. You know, we give money to resolve our problems and not create lasting solutions. So what we've done with the Niger Delta is, I don't know how it's going to work, because once you say, oh, we're not paying these people anymore, we're not going to provide these resources, this money is not going to this person. Because let's say Senator Nwabuchi, for example, is financing a lot of people, and then those people are on this payroll. Okay, that's probably an allegation that I shouldn't, but there are people that benefit from these things. And the day the tap stops flowing, then you would see that these people are going to be restive. They're going to want, they're going to demand for things. And the current framework is to use money to quell it. It's not just in the Niger Delta. It's what's going on in every single part of Nigeria now. You know, people make an agitation and then they try to use money to silence them. So it's going to be difficult, but we need to sit down and then get people that are interested in, not the Ministry of Niger Delta, or you put a minister that actually cares. If you put a minister that cares, then that could work. You could put someone in NDC that cares. That could also work.
But you people that you put people that are interested in the system, and then also now decide and sit down and say, yeah, this patronage system that we're currently operating doesn't work, and we need to find a different solution to it.
Okay, thank you. Yes, did you have
Yeah, please. Yeah, just to answer the question and also follow up on what Kunle said. Something is surprising for me. I've been in Nigerian politics for a long time, and it's still always weird to me when we talk about like getting the right people or things like that. It's just weird that we still need messiahs, despite the fact that we've seen several people not doing the right things because there's an institutional problem. People will not change anything. If you get the best mind, it was the same thing Obasanjo was thinking when he said, oh, I'm going to give Bola Ige the Ministry of Power. This guy cannot steal. So, but at the end of the day, they spent $16 billion on power under Bola Ige and nothing happened. So there's an institutional problem, regardless of who you get Joy Nune. And it's also funny to me because Joy Nune, a lot of the corruption happened under her, but she already blamed Akpabio for it. But we can then blame Professor Pronde and not Akpabio for his own part. So people will not change anything. We have an institutional problem that we need institutional solutions to. A lot of people thought Buhari was going to, you know, come and fight corruption, but corruption is institutional. No one person will come and say, oh, okay, I'm the boss now, then with the body language, we'll stop stealing. It's not possible. They are going to run rings around the best people because you don't even know where to look. In fact, sometimes thieves are better at looking at these things than, you know, the supposed right person. So I really don't think one person or some people with good art can change anything in Nigeria. It just will not happen. For what I see as a possible, okay, you asked if we should scrap the Ministry of Niger Delta. For years, it's been some agitations. We used to give them 3%, then it became 5%, then 15%. Now we are 13% from Obasanjo's time. That's 13% derivation from oil revenue to Niger Delta states. Then there's NDDC, there's Ministry of Niger Delta. Like I said, these things will never shift the needle until there is resource control. It just will. Look at what we have with the gold in the north now. A lot of people did not know that gold became the reason for the fight in Zamfara. People thought they were just bandits, but what were bandits fighting over? The mining sites. So they came to sign a deal with the president last week now that, you know what, the small scale miners, you can do your mining, kill each other on the land, mine, bring it to the federal government who will buy it. Instead of you guys just fighting every day for ownership of land and then the Chinese will come with their own people and you guys will just spill blood. So that is a form of resource control that they did there. But obviously, because oil brings bigger cash, you really can't do that with oil exploration. But we need something like that where people can know that, okay, you know what, our community owns this. There's a sense of ownership to it. But if everything is going to Abuja, and one day you are from the creeks of Niger Delta and you go to Abuja, you see the wide roads, the bridges and all, by the time you get back, you're picking up your AK-47, like, you know what, if I make some noise, they will give me some money. Until we have resource control, I think there will be young people in their 20s or 30s doing a podcast in 2055 talking about what is next for the Niger Delta or what is next for... We'll just keep talking about it. There are several books on... In fact, let me give you a good example on good people and all. Ken Saruwa himself, of Desert Memory, was friends with Abacha. Before Abacha school, they were together, you know, planning the future, and he must have thought, oh, this nice general, they were neighbors, their kids are friends. But Abacha came in, Kansariwa was still like fighting for us, and Abacha thought, no, come on, dude, the country needs oil from under Ogoniland. You really can't be doing this. But who killed him at the end of the day? His previous friend that they planned everything together. So the best people will not change anything until we have an institutional solution that involves owning property and giving people the rights to whatever is existing around them, basically. I mean, that's what is happening in America. That's how the cowboys and landowners were fighting. What happened? Carry property rights. Nobody's fighting anything anymore. Yeah. You move on.
But Ayobami,
I know this is like a long, because we, when it comes to the Land Use Act and private property, it's going to be a very long conversation, because at present, I think it'll be very, very difficult to achieve it because of mutual distrust between both parties. But I just want to be clear. You don't think that, say, a precedent, because you understand, and knowing Obasanjo, for example, you understand that a precedent that is strong-willed, that is not focused, but strong-willed, even if he wants to achieve just one thing, and he says, yeah, I want to achieve this, you don't think he can move the needle?
I think he can, but what happens when he leaves? That's just my problem.
Yeah, for example, you look at Abuja, for example, the FCT where I live. People will tell you that a lot of the structures that are here are still from El Rufai's time. And they'll tell you that, yeah, this was because you see buses from, I don't think there's been any investment in transportation in Abuja since 2007. But that framework is still there, and it's still what we are still managing till today. And there's still that little bit of fear when it comes to the fear of AMAC and all those things. Any little change, I feel like, is a little bit of progress. You know, if someone comes and says, yeah, you know what, let's burn this bridge, let's start afresh, you know, burn everything to the ground, let's see what we can do. And then the person uses a number of years to try and correct the situation. That's my own belief. I'm not necessarily saying there should be a messiah, that, but I feel like more focused and someone that is actually interested, because when there's any form of disinterest, then nobody's going to listen to you. These guys are powerful people. The amount of revenue going into it is a lot. And like I said, a lot of fortune has been built on that NDC money. So,
okay. Thank you very much, guys. I don't want to go over an hour. So if I could have final comments, unless anyone hasn't made them already, in terms of the future, we've got a few suggestions, but are there any other final pressing comments that anyone wants to make? No? Okay.
Oh, sorry. As a final, very, very final comment. This has been a very, very lovely conversation. I've really enjoyed it. Unfortunately, Rashida and Oni left us, but then it's lovely. But then just to reiterate everything that we've said so far, I think although we all differ in strategy and everything, but I think we are all in unison on the fact that we need better political will to solve the issues of corruption within the Niger Delta. We need strong mechanisms for transparency and the sort, and then there is the need to put the right people in the right positions, because as I'll say this, that the agitations and then the cries of the Niger Delta people are still valid as they were many years ago, you know, and all of these things are distractions to that mandate, you know. In all of these, the people who still lose are the people of the Niger Delta. So we need to do better, or the Nigerian government needs to do better to do away with all this messiness and all these distractions, and then focus its strength, its will, and its resources towards meeting the genuine needs and agitations of the Niger Delta people.
And that sounds like a perfect close. I don't think anyone can disagree with that. Thank you very much to the three of you.
You're welcome.
I found that a very informative conversation, personally. And if it's okay with the three of you, I think it would be good to come back in some time, maybe a few weeks, maybe a few months, but to come back sometime and to have a look at how, if the situation has changed at all, whether it's changed and how it's changed. So
yeah, that's fine. Like I was saying earlier, like I would be really, really shocked, you know, if there's any continuation of the probe or if this conversation doesn't stop yet. So I would be pleasantly surprised. But yeah, it'll be nice to do an follow up at some point in time.
I agree. Thank you very much. This is AfroLog.